And it just led me down the road of studying all things sex, not just like STDs and STIs, but and safer sex and all of that. But also it led me down a road of studying pleasure and studying bodies and studying like, and studying ecstasy and finding a spiritual tradition that's an ecstatic spiritual tradition and just kind of infusing my whole life with pleasure and sex and joy.
This is Wine, Women, and Revolution with your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. Hi, and welcome to Wine, Women, and Revolution. I'm your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. You can find us online at www.njrevolutionradio.com. Follow us on all the social medias and get us wherever you get your podcasts from. Today, this is going to be a fun episode. I've met someone I think it was through She Podcasts is where I met her. And I loved her messaging as soon as I saw her. Her name is Brianna Cavanaugh, and she is the host of Fat Girl Finds Love. Welcome to the show, Brianna.
Thank you, Heather. Thank you for having me. I'm excited about your podcast.
So you're kind of a sex and body positivity and love expert, right? How did you get into that?
I started when I was, this is not what I thought I was going to be doing with my life or whatever. But when I was 16, I started working on HIV education, actually, which is in the early 90s. And which is all about sex. It's a, you know, sexually transmitted disease. And then once I started looking at that, all kinds of things happened. I discovered that I was queer. I discovered sex parties. I discovered sex education. And like, basically from the time I was 16, I started being a sex educator. I started being a sex educator before I'd had sex, actually.
Interesting. Okay.
But I started because I was meeting people who had HIV who were not in all the kind of demonized groups. Like, there was a lot of demonizing of gay men as like the people who are transmitting this disease. But I kept meeting like straight women who had gotten it from their partners or from blood transfusions or from sharing needles. Like, and I was like basically incensed that this was happening and that like their children were going to be affected by, you know, losing their parents and this whole kind of narrative of like, oh, this is just a reason to demonize gay men. And I was like, that is unacceptable.
Yeah, there were some horrible lies and myths with the beginning of when HIV was first discovered.
Yeah, and people were like dropping like flies, and there was this, yeah, it was kind of a horrifying time. And so I basically just wanted to find out everything about that. And like, and I hadn't had sex, and it didn't really occur to me till much later that like maybe if I hadn't had sex, I shouldn't be working on sex stuff. Like, it just didn't occur to me. I was like, oh, this is really important. We should talk about sex.
Right.
And we just need to talk about it. Like, we just need to talk about it. And it just led me down the road of studying all things sex, not just like STDs and STIs, but and safer sex and all of that. But also it led me down a road of studying pleasure and studying bodies and studying like, and studying ecstasy and finding a spiritual tradition that's an ecstatic spiritual tradition and just kind of infusing my whole life with pleasure and sex and joy.
Which seems good. That seems like a pretty awesome life you've crafted there.
It's pretty good. It's surprisingly good, you know, given that we live in this world that's sort of self-destructing right now. Like, I realized years ago that pleasure is super revolutionary, right? Like, pleasure and just being allowed to live in a body is without oppression is like super revolutionary. So, you know, women, we live in these bodies that are constantly oppressed, especially if we are fat bodied people. And deciding to allow myself to live without dieting and without that like constriction of and forced hypervigilance meant that I have energy for everything else in my life, energy for raising a like kind of super revolutionary, radical feminist son, and finding an amazing, extraordinary partner and starting a business and traveling and all kinds of stuff. Yeah, it's been a kind of ongoing revolution in my life.
Right. Well, even just liking yourself, anyone liking themselves, is kind of revolutionary under capitalism, because we are, you know, they'd want to sell you things to fix everything that's wrong with you. So they have to convince you everything that's wrong with you. And especially the diet industry is like, God, they've kind of created a problem that isn't necessarily a problem. And they're selling you some sort of solution to it that is never really going to be a solution.
They created, so I don't know if you, I was just, again, reading about this. I'm reading Christy Harrison's anti-diet book, which I just highly, highly recommend. First of all, her work is amazing. And she was, again, going through this history of sort of diet culture. And we've known for 150 years that dieting, like, makes you fat. Like, that's, there's lots of science. There's lots of studies that shows if you do calorie restriction, especially repeated calorie restriction of any sort over a long period of time, it increases your body weight. And somehow through this sort of weaving together of racism and capitalism and anti, like, and the sort of marketing industry, like the anti, like being okay industry, they've created a diet industry that says that if you just work hard enough, you can change your body. But we know, and we've known for a long time, that we can make people thin temporarily, but every time you do that, you actually are changing people's brains to focus on scarcity and to focus on food, and then also to get fat as soon as they stop.
Right, because your body thinks you're starving at that point in time. Like, oh, food is so not a reliable thing. We've got to hold on to everything because we know when we're going to get fed again, because we're only eating 800 calories for the past month.
Exactly. Exactly. And in fact, there was a study in World War II where they took a bunch of white men and they put them on very restrictive diets, and it changed the course of their whole lives. And they did this voluntarily. This was not even one of those studies where they're like, we're going to do things to people and not tell them. Like, people signed up to the help the war effort. And so there's been, you know, government studies for 80 years where we know, you know, that if you do this to people, it changes, it just changes how their brains work. It changes their body. It changes everything. So this idea that the diet industry, the 70 plus now $72 billion a year diet industry, $72 billion a year to sell people something that actually doesn't work, is like, it's kind of mind blowing to me that people keep.
Right. And just the amount of like shame and bias that comes along with it. Like, just recently, it was when I was prepping to do this interview, and I saw this. There was a book just recently that a friend of mine had posted that was like a children's book, and it had a girl that was heavier on the cover. Now, it was illustrated. It was, you know, some cartoon book for little kids, and it was a heavier girl doing yoga. And people were incensed just by seeing the cover of this book. They had internalized that bias so much that even just seeing someone on the cover of a book was enough to like spark Facebook debates and anger and all kinds of negativity.
So I did learn something recently about that, about the moral outrage connected to fatness that I did not know before. First of all, I want to say something about using the word fat. I use the word fat as a self-descriptor, because I believe that we need to take the charge or bias out of using the word fat, that we should be able to use whatever word we want, and that it shouldn't be a bad word. It shouldn't be negative. It shouldn't be an insult. We shouldn't be hurling insults at people anyway. But some people say fat, some people say higher weight, as ways of talking about people and not pathologizing them, using, sometimes we call it the O word, obesity. Is a pathologizing word. It's a medical term. It's a capitalist word, basically, for fat people. And it's a way of saying that there's something wrong with you. So instead of, or overweight, which implies that there is a weight that you should be being, right? So instead of any pathologizing language, I use either higher weight or I use fat, but I use fat as a self descriptor these days. So I just use the word fat. So this idea of moral outrage about fatness. Okay, so can I tell you, can I give you a little bit of information? Like, I'm super excited I found out about this. I've been reading this book. It's so great. So we know that, and you know that because you from Sandra Springs, who you interviewed on about fearing the black body, all of this weight control idea came out of not wanting white women's bodies to be like black women's bodies and not wanting white women's bodies to be like out of control and all of this stuff. So we know right away that it's about controlling white women's bodies. But around World War II, there was this this connecting of moral outrage that like you should be working really hard, right? And that it's really important for the war effort, for your country, you know, that you not be a burden, right? And so they connected dieting and weight right into that. And so from that point forward, moral outrage has been part of the fat phobia is also like this, like, oh my God, how could you? Like, mm-hmm. how could you? And that has to do with like, it's this sort of amazing thing. They actually did studies about this and they decided to keep the moral outrage in the diet industry because it actually is very compelling for people. It's more the idea that you are actually personally responsible for your weight and that you can, and therefore you can control it. And you should control it. And it's a moral failing if you don't control it. And it's a moral failing if you eat the wrong thing, if you are the wrong weight, if you look the wrong way, that it's your fault, is actually, the studies show that it's actually a way to push people and to motivate people to keep buying diet products.
Right. Well, and I mean, so, that's a very capitalist mindset for everything. That yes. If you're poor, yes. It's your fault. It's not systemic that's failures. Right. It's your fault. You know, that very right. individualizing of blame and shame is something we see across all parts of society. If you get that's raped, right. It's your fault. What were you wearing? You know, like.
Yeah, that's right. Because it comes from this idea that you are in control of your body, you should be in control of your body, and it's your responsibility to be in control of your body. And so all of those things are connected, and all these products are moved forward, right? All the money is dumped into them based on this idea, right? If at any point we went, well, it's not your fault, basically capitalism falls apart.
Mm-hmm. It does. And
I'm actually really into that idea. That somehow we get to be able to lift all the shame, and then we get to, because it actually frees up all of this energy. And so instead of spending all of our time and energy and money making sure that you're eating the right food and looking the right way and wearing the right makeup and, you know, wearing the right clothes, and which is actually about class as well as about money, as well as about bodies, all of these things go together. And the minute you're like, I do what I want, like everything sort of falls apart. Everybody's like, no, oh, you can't. Which is why women's power, right, is such a threat. Which is why, for example, can't elect Elizabeth Warren. Because the minute that we can decide that women have power in a real systemic way, it starts to undermine the whole thing.
Well, I mean, and so much of this, I mean, and that's why, you know, the fact that you're a body positivity and sex expert at the same time, because it's all about things that are put in to control women. Oh, you can't have too much sex, or you can't have sex this way, or you can't have this kind of sex. You've got to just do what, you know, we've got to make sure it's just about you continuing and having kids and being barefoot and pregnant, or you've got to make sure you look this way. Like, it's all about control of women, control of the reproductive capital.
That's right. The deeper truth, actually, so it's about control of women's bodies, women's minds, women's health, our children, the indoctrination of our children, which also actually ends up being the mechanism for reproducing capitalism, is actually women parenting children and reinforcing this bias that is beat into us one way or another. And that actually is also controlling men I know that we don't like to necessarily go in that direction, but that is part of perpetuating the entire cycle, right? And so if you free any part of the cycle, then the whole thing starts to unravel. So it's even now just a kind of a social agreement that this is still happening, right? Like when we start to free up more and more people, what's happening is the system is starting to collapse. And that's what we're seeing, I think, politically, socially, and all these different ways, is people are either becoming more free or being desperate for more freedom. So they're doing things, they're like pulling threads of the tapestry. And so instead of body positivity, I usually talk about fat positivity, because that actually swings it, you know, all the way over. If you start talking about super fat folks and infinifat folks, you start to look at really creating happiness for the most marginalized among us. And then shit really gets real, because then you have to confront like your bias and your weirdness and all the diet stuff. And yeah, like that.
And so the work you're doing is just awesome. Like, I really appreciate people that are doing this, like, frontline work on ending all stigmas, because stigmas are shit and we need to get rid of them. Yeah. Any stigma that you hold is biases and internal biases that you hold are bullshit and you need to stop having them.
Agreed. Yeah. And they're programmed. These stigmas are actually programmed into us. And that means that we can deprogram them, right? We can make decisions to look at different media. We can make decisions to get educated. We can make decisions to educate our children. We can make decisions about how we vote and take action. And all of these things can help shift the whole narrative to something that is easier, better, more fun.
Right. And speaking of fun things, I want to get into a little bit of talking about sex before we end it today.
Oh, I love sex.
Who doesn't love sex? Sex is awesome. But the idea of that you're a fat woman who's having sex and enjoying sex and having good sex is kind of like
having a lot of sex.
That's almost an alien concept in society these days.
It's a little weird, right? Like, I was, and what's weird about it, I was sitting around with other fat women last week, and we were talking about this idea. So I'm gonna tell you a little story. Years and years and years ago, maybe 10 years ago, I was sitting in a hot tub at Harbin Hot Springs, a place that I love, with a bunch of people and one other fat woman and I, and a bunch of men and other folks. And she started talking about how, she's like, oh, it's so hard to get laid. And then she turned to me and she was like, right? And I thought about it for a second and I was like, actually, no, I don't have that problem. And it made me wonder, like, do all fat women have, you know, or fat people in general have a hard time getting laid? And so I've started asking fat people if they have a hard time having sex. And I think that I think the answer is both yes and no. Like, last week it was like, no, I have a lot of sex, right? Like, there was a bunch of women who were just like, I have tons of sex. And I've definitely talked about to other folks who are like, oh no, I definitely find it hard. I find it hard to date. And what it made me realize is that fat women's experiences in that way are not actually that different than women's experiences, right? Like, some women find it easy to date. Some women find it hard to date. Some women have lots of sex. Some women have not as much sex. Like, it's just very normal to have a range of sexual experiences.
Right. <It's>
normal. but yeah, so I am on the, I like to have sex end of the sex spectrum, and I like to have sex with lots of different genders and body types, and I like it. I think it's great.
Right. And I mean, I've been with my husband since we were 20, and I am now 43. I've been having quite a bit of sex with my husband for a very long time now. And, you know, it's just, you don't hear women, and especially not fat women, talking about having sex and loving sex and liking your body and how it responds during sex. Like, these kind of conversations are, again, not a mainstream conversation. They're not.
Yes. Yeah, I think that has to do with this level of oppression, that if we assume that fat people's bodies are out of bounds, right, that there's something wrong with fat women's bodies, then they don't do, as a result, they don't do normal things, right? Mm-hmm. Like have sex, which is a normal thing, right? So we assume that fat women's bodies are sexless. and this is assumed of women like over 40, like this last fuckable day thing that I don't know if you ever saw that little video, the last fuckable, your last fuckable day. Oh my God.
You're going to have to tell me what YouTube. The last fuckable day is.
Well, there are these three, oh gosh, I can't remember everybody's names, but these three very famous actresses get together to celebrate one of their last fuckable day. And it's like, oh, you know, once you pass whatever, I think it's 40, like you can't get any more roles having sex. But men, you know, can be kind of heartthrobs into their like 70s.
Right.
Like, what the hell is up with that? And so they do a whole little skit about it. You should definitely look it up on YouTube. It's hilarious. But yeah. It also just shines this light on this idea that even though these women are like thin and like, you know, mega stars, they're suddenly like, what do you mean I can't be, you know, play the ingenue anymore? Like, are you kidding me? Like, my co-star is 25 years older than me. How is that even a thing that like, really? You need someone younger, even younger than me to play his partner?
What? Yeah, that happens quite a lot in movies and on TV, of the age gap between, and just the attractiveness gap usually in TV shows and whatnot, right, between men and women. Like, homely looking men like are partnered up with beautiful women in like every sitcom you can think of, you know?
Yes. Yeah. So I think that reinforces men's entitlement about having any women that they want. Like, there's this idea that, you know, a man should be able to have sex with whoever he wants, you know, that he gets to pick. It turns out in reality, typically women actually do the picking. And you know, that's, there's no way it universally true, but if you ask men, and I have a lot, they are like, oh yeah, she totally picks, you know, she picked me.
Mm-hmm.
Which is funny because like you think of men approach, like the typical interaction is men approach women, right? And then they ask women, and but then women get to say yes or no, right? We actually don't get to, we in media, we also don't think of women as saying no, like they still only say no until they say yes, right? Mm-hmm. That eventually if a man pursues a woman long enough, she will say yes, which is horseshit, don't believe that. But this idea that like, well, you know, of course it's him, but in reality the women are the ones who get to say yes or no, men are pursuing them. Again, this is not universal. This is like how we kind of perceive
the stories reality. We tell ourselves. Yeah.
Right. And so as a result, we have, a, you know, there's a lot of women waiting around being like, well, why hasn't he asked me yet?
Yeah. But, see, I totally like, violated these cultural norms. I met, you know, my husband was a friend of my roommate in college, and my pickup line for him, like the first night, was, if you'd like, you can sleep in my room tonight.
Yes, that's awesome.
And we've been together ever since.
That's so amazing. Good job. Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, I think everybody should pick up on everyone. Like, mm-hmm. you know, if not in a grody way, but just in a like, hi, I think you're great. Let's right. hang out. Let's spend time together. Do you want to make out? Do you want to have sex? Let's do it. Yeah. So I've been doing a whole series on my podcast of about fat sex, at interviewing fat women about having sex. A bunch of us go to Cancun and like
nice.
We have a giant sex vacation for a week every year, which is fantastic. Highly recommend. And so this last year, which was our third year, I was like, hey, fat women, do you, you know, can I interview you? And I did like a bunch of interviews while I was there. And it was great because we told a lot of stories about sex that we were having with all kinds of people in all kinds of ways. Like there was a dungeon where people got tied up and spanked and all kinds of stuff. And we had amazing stories from the dungeon.
Stories from the dungeon.
It was really good. It's like, and for us, it's really normal. Like we were just talking about sex as though we just have sex and as though sex were just normal for us, which it is. Right. So we were talking about sex with our partners. We were talking about when we like to have sex and how, and like what was great about being on vacation and having sex and like having sex by the hot tub. And, you know, it's a clothing optional place. So, you know, there are places that you can have sex outside, which is like, if you're into it, it's great. So yeah, we get to talk about sex as much as we want to talk about sex, you know, and it was great. Partly it was great because it was so fun to get to interview people and hear them be just like excited, turned on, tell their stories. And I feel like we just don't tell stories, you know, about sex in general. No. And we definitely don't tell stories about fat sex. So I'm pretty thrilled to get to be interviewing women about their
sex. Yeah, that's a very cool podcast idea that you have there for sure.
Thanks. It's been very fun. When I thought of it, I was like, I really need to talk about this stuff. Like, I really need to, like, I've been doing all this stuff and I feel like I've gotten to this place where, like, I have all this information to share and all, you know, like, it just needs to get out in the world. And then I started talking to people like, oh yeah, let's talk about it. Let's, you know, so I've been interviewing all these amazing people. I recommend in general talking about sex.
And that's what you do now. That's what your podcast is about. So it works out really well.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're just about out of time for today. So going to get your plugs in, where people can find you. And
Yes. So I am on Facebook and Twitter as Fat Girl Finds Love. So you can find the podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and basically everywhere that you can find podcasts. We have a website, fatgirlfindslove.com, and you can find us on Facebook and Twitter and on Instagram. Right now I'm just using my regular Instagram, which is Love Dosed, where I'm showing pictures of my fat body and fat bodies of with me and my friends so that you get to see normalized, like, all different kinds of bodies. It's very fun. I'm just having a really good time.
That's awesome. Living your best life, right? You know,
living
that's
my best that's fat life.
It's been great talking to you today. I've had a blast talking to you.
Yeah, thank you. Same here.
To my listeners, thank you so much for joining us here today. Hopefully you had as much fun listening to this interview as I had recording it. And, you know, sometimes we do very deep dives on this show. And even though we had fun today, we talked about some really serious topics, things that, you know, we talk about. It's the same oppression and the same kinds of biases and phobias and not loving yourself that we find in so many things. And we love activists and we love sharing stories that aren't getting told in mainstream media. That's really what we're here for. And we always have to keep asking you, since we do not take any corporate money on this show, if you can go onto our website, www.njrevolutionradio.com, and click on that donate button, even if it's only a couple of dollars a month, it really does help us pay for hosting fees and pay for travel so we can get out to more events. And we appreciate you so much. We appreciate you for being here, for supporting us. The future is yours to create. Go out there and create it.